I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. Today I have two exceptional guests who practice holistically in the practice of cardiology and metabolic medicine. In order to take advantage of all information presented, I have reduced the introduction and will give a second part of the interview with the second guest next time. More information can be found about these exceptional guests on their websites and on my website. My first guest, Dr. Cynthia Take, is a heart doctor who practices with her heart. Intuitively, she has known that she would serve this calling since the age of 5. After accompanying her physician mother to the medical clinic in their home country of Myanmar, formerly known as Burma, there she witnessed the pure hands-on art of healing, free from the modern challenges of drugs, bureaucracy, and the threat of malpractice. Dr. Cynthia began her professional training at the University of Chicago's Pritzker School of Medicine. From there, she completed her internal medicine and cardiology training at Harvard's training programs. She manages two successful cardiology clinics and is the founder of Revitalize You, a wellness center focusing on health, nutrition, weight loss, and detoxification. A practicing Buddhist, Dr. Cynthia is now on a mission to deliver that message about healing through her new book, Your Vibrant Heart, Restoring Health, Strength, and Spirit from the Body's Core. Dr. Take has received numerous awards and honors, including the Cardiovascular Research Award from the American College of Cardiology and the LA Business Journal's Women Making a Difference nomination in 2005. In addition to her book, she has published several peer-reviewed articles in professional journals and is involved in her professional organizations. More information is available at www.drcynthia.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Cynthia, and I look forward to hearing about your holistic approach to heart care and wellness. Now, first, with hundreds of books about maintaining a healthy heart, how is your book different and how does it stand out?
Yeah, you know, so many books are out there that sort of delivers the tactical aspect, you know, mm-hmm. sort of the how-to. Mm-hmm. And I think that while that's important, you know, there's hundreds, literally thousands of books out there talking about nutrition and fitness. And yet, you know, we still have a society of obese people, and we still have a society with, you know, so much hypertension, diabetes, and hypercholesterolemia. And so my book is more about transformation. It's about moving people, about energizing and inspiring people to really get out and take action. And so and then also what my book does is not only talk about the physical aspect of the heart and nutrition and fitness, but really covers more of the emotional and spiritual mm-hmm. aspect because, mm-hmm. again, I so much believe that it is in how we hold our thoughts and how we are skillful at safeguarding our emotions that the real magic happens.
Mm-hmm. These are all so interrelated. And when I had lung cancer 39 years ago, my doctor gave me the physical, but being a nurse, I decided, well, there's more than that to it, so I added the mental and the spiritual. And I think, like you, that it's the mental and spiritual are just as important as the physical, but many doctors still just stick with the physical and with giving yeah. the drugs and not getting into some of the other aspects that are so important.
Absolutely. You know, yesterday I saw a patient who came in with stage 4 gastric cancer, and mm-hmm. and I asked him when his original diagnosis was, and he said 2014. And immediately I said, I bet I know how you've survived up till now. And he said, absolutely right, because he was given a 3 to 6 month expectancy, mm-hmm. and he just decided to not own that reality. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. yes, he had gastric cancer, and it was inoperable in stage four, but he did not own that he was going to live only 3 months.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he, since then, he's bet the odds multiple times. And so our minds and how we choose to view ourselves, whether we choose to view ourselves as being healthy or unhealthy, really creates that reality for us.
Mm-hmm. When I hear from cancer patients and they tell me that the doctor told them they had 6 months to live or 3 months to live, I write back and I say, that is not a medical diagnosis, that's a God diagnosis, and only God knows when we're going to die. And I was given that diagnosis 39 years ago, so
yes.
Get that out of your head.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Then why is a healthy heart key to one's overall well-being?
Well, you know, honestly, the heart is the most vital organ in our body, right? It's very function is necessary to sustain life. And yet, for many of us, we don't look at our heart health and consider it a gift, and we take it for granted until it's taken away from us. We all know that heart disease is the leading killer of death among men and women. 1 in 3 will die of heart disease. Mm-hmm. And yet, we are not taking the actions that we need to be taking to prevent this. It is, you know, heart disease is definitely a very preventable and controllable disease, and it's so important for patients to take ownership of that and to move forward and really value that, really value their heart and want to care for it and love it and nurture it before it's too late.
Great. Good. Dr. Cynthia, will you tell us about your vibrant heart movement?
Yeah. You know, for me, someone having a vibrant heart, I consider it that to be the birthright of an individual. And when you think about it, you know, when we're born, you know, we only have to look at our children to know that they have such vibrancy, such life, such energy, spirit, and joy and laughter. And through the years, through, you know, all of our stressors, with all the, you know, that life has to offer, be it our job, the family, the finances, et cetera, and all the stress that gets beaten on us, we lose that vibrancy. We lose that joy that intrinsically is in a vibrant heart. And so for me, my absolute passion, and really I call it a movement, is to try and inspire people to know that a vibrant heart is indeed their birthright, and what are the steps that they can take to really regain that vibrancy. And so that's what I envision for the world. And to me, when you get to that state of vibrancy, you really achieve an inner peace, an inner serenity that, to me, is priceless, and I value even higher than health, because you can't have health without having that inner peace.
Right.
And really, that's what my message is about, and what the book is about, is really showing people how they can reclaim their vibrant heart.
Great. Then, what first made you interested in studying medicine, and especially cardiology?
Well, you know, my mom's a physician.
Oh, she is.
And I wasn't born in the States. Mm-hmm. You know, I was born in Burma, a country called Myanmar now. And I have very vivid memories of really accompanying my mom to her medical clinic when I was just really a child, 5, 6 years old. And there I distinctly remember seeing just rows and lines of patients, you know, standing literally all day to have an opportunity to see my mom. And my child's view, right, of medicine is really that loving touch, that hands-on art of healing, because as you can imagine, back in those days, and particularly in a third world country, we didn't have all the sophisticated technology and so forth. We just had the ability to listen, the ability to really offer hope, words of wisdom. And so that was my child's view of what medicine is about. You know, jump ahead 20 years, obviously I was in the United States, studied at all the, you know, the high academic centers, and really got attracted to the technology and the excitement of the hemodynamics of the heart. And I remember as a medical student being able to be in an operating room and holding that heart, and it just thrilled me, excited me, and so that was sort of my journey of going from a very innocent, childlike view of medicine to a high technology and pharmaceutical-driven world. And what I'm pleased about my journey is that I've been able to come full circle around and get back to recognizing and realizing that it is still the human touch that's the most important, and that's where the healing really takes place.
Right. And I can see then why you practice the East-West medicine. But isn't it difficult to practice that in the United States?
It is, but, you know, I think more and more patients are desiring that. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, we've gotten into such a state with our medical community where so much is driven by pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. And I think that the patients are finally, you know, waking up and recognizing and realizing, particularly with the side effects, particularly with the cost, and you know, some outright, you know, poor outcomes, that they're naturally looking for a more natural, integrative, holistic approach. And I think that the time is right. It certainly is something that has infused, you know, new energy into me, into my practice. I love being able to talk to patients about nutrition and, you know, herbs and Reiki therapy or meditation and yoga. And and it just adds a different feel to medicine. It takes the focus away from what's wrong with me, what's my disease, and what medicines can you give me, to really how can I elevate, you know, how can I as a physician help my patients to elevate themselves to a higher level of consciousness that will make them take personal action and responsibility with respect to their nutrition, fitness, and getting interested and excited in learning all these other new modalities that can really then lead them to health and have health be the focus rather than disease be the focus.
Mm-hmm. I think that's wonderful, and I wish that there were more of you to go around. Mm-hmm. I had an experience recently with a heart problem, and the person that I saw just focused on the physical and used fear to force me into medications, which I don't usually take. But at the time, I said to him, well, I'll take these, but only until I find out what's causing the problem, and then I'll want to get off, because I said, all you're doing is treating the symptoms. And so when it came time to get off, he got very upset that I was going to stop the medications, and I told him, it's my body. I make the decision about my body. And so I came off the medications, but he wasn't very happy about it. And I'm not sure about the information he gave me on coming off, because he told me to discontinue the beta blockers in 3 days. And I have a naturopathic physician that sent me research that told me that might not be the best way to do it. So I took longer to come off the beta blockers, but
yes,
it would have been better.
That was smart.
It'd been better if we'd had someone like you with nutrition and herbs and all things and meditation and prayer and all of that, than to have someone that just focuses, as you say, on the disease process.
That's right, and that's the way I practice too. You know, I really believe in being balanced and being center. I do know there are some, you know, colleagues of mine who are sort of in the naturopathic arena where they'll taboo every pharmaceutical, and I don't think that is right either. And so, I mean, there's always situations when, you know, someone's blood pressure is astronomically high, or their blood sugars are off the chart, that you got to start with the medications first. But I always tell my patients, when I start you on this medication, is to avoid an acute problem. But then from there on, our emphasis, our goal, our target has to be to shift you so that you can eventually come off these medications.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I tell my patients, I could do the acute thing of, you know, there isn't a blood pressure that I couldn't lower with drugs.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
ultimately, if anyone's going to heal that body, if anyone's going to, you know, bring mm-hmm. that blood pressure down mm-hmm. in a more natural way, it has to reside in the hand of the patient.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're the ones who have the true power to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that absolutely through lifestyle changes and intervention.
Mm-hmm. I like your philosophy. And can you tell us then a little bit about how our thoughts and emotions influence our physical health?
Yeah. I like to teach my patients that every thought, every emotion really leads to an instantaneous cascade of hundreds, if not thousands, of neurotransmitters and cytokines and, you know, hormones and inflammatory markers and so forth. And we know that, I mean, cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, the dopamine, the serotonin. And we use pharmaceuticals oftentimes to address that, right? We have all these serotonin inhibitors for the antidepressants. But mm-hmm. given that our thoughts and our emotions are creating, you know, these abnormal patterns of molecules, we should be using our thoughts and mm-hmm. our emotions and controlling mm-hmm. our emotions to downregulate the negative players and upregulate the positive players, rather than trying to use pharmaceuticals to suppress or mm-hmm. or manipulate those hormones. Those hormones and neurotransmitters are a sort of a natural symphony that plays within our body, and we get a choice. We get a choice as to whether we're going to play a beautiful, you know, symphony, or we're going to play, you know, heavy metal, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is our choice. And the more that patients can wake up to the realization that no one gets to control their thoughts other than them, no one gets to control their emotions other than them, no one gets to control their actions other
mm-hmm.
than them,
mm-hmm.
and they have absolute 100% control over that. It isn't dictated by circumstances or situations. It is all within them. And it's a matter of systematically learning how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the end of the program, I will tell your listeners mm-hmm. about a program that I
Great.
Have that where mm-hmm. I literally walk them through that process.
Great. Good. Good. Then you've mentioned some of the mind, spiritual things that you talk with people about in your practice. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of these methods?
Yeah, you know, for me, I like to think of things in sort of categories.
Mm-hmm,
and so
mm-hmm.
certainly from a physical standpoint, you know, the pillars are nutrition, fitness, and detoxification.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I can elaborate on that. But, you know, nutrition is about eating whole food, you know, having lots of greens, eating things that are more of an alkaline diet, getting
mm-hmm.
away from
mm-hmm.
the processed food, the sugars, the artificial chemicals. Fitness, about getting out every day, doing something,
mm-hmm.
having movement, mobility, at least 5 days a week, ideally 30 minutes a day, and always look to progress, to build on your, you know, what you've done the previous days. And then detoxification, getting rid of the various toxins within our bodies, from the food that we take in to the chemicals, and think to do a good cleanse or detox program at least twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
From the physical, I move to the mental and emotional, and I really, as much as I take people through a physical detox,
mm-hmm.
I also take people through an emotional or mental detox. I think that the mind, and again, the, you know, whether we choose to live in stress, fear, worry, anxiety, versus whether we choose to lean into love, gratitude, appreciation, joy,
mm-hmm.
can make all the difference in the world. And so how do you take your mind and think empowering thoughts? How do you remove limiting beliefs, et cetera? And part of being able to do that are some of these other lifestyle techniques or tools, such as meditation, yoga, tai chi, because what that allows you to do is to get quiet, to get
mm-hmm.
still, to be present in the moment, and to be able to reconnect to your inner guide. And the more that people can get interested in learning and cultivating these tools with, you know, they it will provide them with a wonderful way to just Mm-hmm. Just be present, exist, mm-hmm. and coexist within themselves, and to really then lean into co-creation and move into vision and vibration and creating, really co-creating the life that you would love living.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so my book covers all that. It mm-hmm. covers sort of the physical things with respect to nutrition, fitness, and detoxification, but it also talks a lot about laughter and dance and music and all these other ways that you can lift your moods and your vibration. And then there are beautiful things such as visualization, vision boards, tapping, mind movies.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different avenues that people can explore. And I invite people to have a gentleness about it, to have an openness and an ease about it, and just allow their heart to really speak to them and let their inner guide them as to the best course or avenue that will promote, you know, heart health and overall health and abundance within their lives and relationships and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Good. Then what are some roadblocks on the path to health and wellness, and how can people overcome these?
Well, I think that the biggest roadblock that I see is really the patients themselves and mm-hmm. how they're thinking, whether their mindsets and their thoughts are resonating positive beliefs and, you know, lifting them up, or whether it's in more of the negative in terms of feeling that things are being beaten upon them and that, you know, that they're not in control of their lives. It is in formulating the belief, having a vision, and moving forward that I think that the magic of health and healing comes about. And so I think the biggest roadblock to me is really how a person is choosing to think. And, you know, their self-doubt, self-judgment, the negative aspects of their thinking that exist as a roadblock between themselves and their better self, their higher self.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. Then can you tell us more about Revitalize You, your wellness clinic?
Yeah, my Revitalize You is the name of my wellness center, and there we guide patients through all the stuff that I've been talking about, really focusing on their nutrition. I have a number of different programs that we offer. First, you know, just at the core is really about what we're doing to our bodies and what we're putting into our bodies. So I take, we have a program where we have a cleanse, and I take people through a detoxification of their physical environment and nutrition and what they're putting into their mouth. And then I have a mental detox program where we can clear their mind of all the, mm-hmm. the negative self-thought and the fear and the stress and anxiety. And then we have this wonderful program that is not my program. It's called Ideal Protein, and people can look that up. But it's a weight loss. It's a medically supervised, FDA-approved program that really allow me to guide the patients to addressing their metabolic syndrome and all the different perturbations that have developed over the years of abuse, in particular insulin resistance, and really being able to teach the body and the cells to how to respond appropriately to the signals that we give it with respect to our food and the sugar spikes and so forth. And
mm-hmm.
so to date, we've taken about 500 patients through our various programs and are closing in on about 14,000 pounds of weight loss. And
mm-hmm.
so it's amazing to me what our patients are capable of
mm-hmm.
when
mm-hmm.
they are given the tools and the guidelines and the appropriate mindset to move forward. It gives me such joy and pride to see that when patients do choose to take actions, they can do amazing things.
And I'm sure they have great joy when this happens, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Because it's not easy to get the weight off.
Yes.
Do you have any tips on building a support system of people around who will help make healthy choices?
Absolutely. You know, I think that with everything in life, be it our success, our wealth, our health, we are really a reflection of the people around us, you know, the closest, you know, five people around us. And that applies really across the board. And so I tell people that if you're looking to move into a new direction, surround yourself with the people that are already models of that. You know, surround yourself with healthy people who are going to the gym. Surround yourself with people who are looking to go to a juice bar or to a vegan restaurant as opposed to a fast food chain or a burger joint. Really surround yourself with positive, upbeat, forward-thinking individuals rather than those that are going to be naysayers or, you know, feed you with more limiting beliefs. And so it's really important that you model what you're trying to achieve and mm-hmm. that you surround yourself with other people who are modeling that.
Then would you like to add anything before we look at your book and how the listeners can locate it and also how they can locate you?
Yes. I think that my overall arching message is that a vibrant heart is your birthright. There's absolutely ways in which you can go ahead and reclaim that. I invite people to get interested and get interested in their health, get interested in their lives, come at things from a more positive vision, learn how to create a dream for what you want your life to look like and the health piece within that.
Do you get much from patients saying, I don't have time to do meditation or I don't have time to do affirmations or visualization or are they...
I do, and again, I invite them when they say that to me to take a look, because that's a limiting belief. When people tell me they don't have the time or the energy or the money, it's never about that. Those are just, you know, excuses in their own mind. and we can always create the time. We can always find the money or find the energy. And we often do. I mean, so people are spending time and spending money doing the activities that they like. And it might not be the healthiest for them or it might not be the best self-serving for them. And so it's really a matter of just taking a reassessment, taking, you know, restock of their life and making a decision. You know, make a decision on your health, and once you make that decision, act on it, and the time will appear. I promise you that when you get interested and commit to something, you will find the time. It's never an issue.
Great, good. Then would you, Dr. Cynthia, tell us about your book and services and how listeners can reach you?
So my book is Your Vibrant Heart, Restoring Health, Strength, and Spirit from the Body's Core. They can certainly find the book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or any of the brick-and-mortar bookstores. They can also come to my website, which is drcynthia.com, or the book website, which is yourvibrantheart.com, and take a look at that. In addition, when they come to the Dr. Cynthia website, they'll see our nutritional services, our wellness services, including my mental detox program, which I think, you know, is really something that everyone can benefit from. If someone is interested in taking a look at that, a URL that they can go and just type into the Google is mentaldetoxprogram.com, so all one word, no space, .com. And they'll be taken to that page that has information about that. And just, you know, for your listeners, I wanted to give a gift and give them a gift coupon to get 50% off that program. And so if they type in gift 50 with no space into the promotion code, they'll get that for 50% off.
Great.
And so, again, I just invite people to get interested and know that there are always tools and resources and individuals and programs out there to help them and to advance them. They have to take the action and want to create that new reality for themselves. It starts with, you know, with that individual.
Do you have phone consultation or do patients come to you?
You know, for the most part, patient comes to see me. So I'm in Burbank and Valencia. But I am developing a coaching program. And so if people want to, you know, reach out to me and they're far, we could always do a Skype consultation. I tell patients, you know, that over a Skype or over a phone, I cannot act as their physician or give them, you know, concrete medical advice. I'm always going to refer them back to their local physician. But I'm absolutely happy to act in more of a coaching role in giving them guidance with respect to their nutrition and fitness, and more importantly, and to help them with their mental and emotional state. And so if they wanted to do that, they can call my office. The number there is 818-842-1410, or send me an email at info@drcynthia.com. It's just drcynthia.com.
Well, this has been great, Dr. Cynthia. I really admire what you're doing, and I support it 100% because, you know, I think holism is the way to go, and I'm honored to have had you on my show. So
Thank you, Carl. I'm pleased to be here, and the more opportunities I have to really spread my message of health and happiness and peace, that's really what I'm all about.
Great. Good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You have a great day.
You too. My second guest, Dr. Albert Mensa, is an internationally recognized physician specializing in metabolic treatment approaches for patients with developmental, learning, behavioral, and mental health disorders. Dr. Mensa is the president and co-founder of Mensa Medical, the world's largest biomedical practice, specializing in biochemical individuality and imbalances. Mensa Medical's non-drug nutrient approach is tailored to correct biochemical imbalances associated with autism, anxiety, depression, including postpartum, behavioral and learning disorders, OCD, eating disorders, bipolar disorders, schizophrenia, Alzheimer's disease, and Parkinson's disease. Dr. Mensa regularly consults with physicians, psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, and other healthcare professionals, and leads annual physician training with William J. Walsh, Ph.D., of the Walsh Research Institute of Orthomolecular Medicine in the United States, Australia, and Ireland. Mensa Medical's main clinic is located near Chicago, and patients can be seen at their U.S. outreach clinics located in Scottsdale, Arizona, Annapolis, Maryland, and near San Francisco and Los Angeles, California. More information is available at www.mensamedical.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Mensa, and I look forward to hearing about how you treat mental, learning, and behavioral disorders without medications. Now first, what drew you to the field of orthomolecular medicine?
Yes, sir. Actually, Carl, I'll make a very long story short. I'm probably one of the world's biggest skeptics. And at the time, I was about to sign a very lucrative contract in a small town west of Chicago when my now business partner called me and mentioned that she was working at this place that treated illness in a very unique way. And I said, well, what way is that? She said, well, they use these nutrients and vitamins and minerals. And I said, oh, come on. You've got to be kidding me. And she said, no, no, you have to come here and see this for yourself. And they treat, you know, anxiety and depression and autism and schizophrenia, and people get better. Well, I said, now, wait a minute. Now, these are the key difficult areas in psychiatry currently, and you're telling me that they're actually treating these conditions and people are getting better without the use of medication? Well, Carl, I was very skeptical, of course. So, but, you know, my friend was one of the few friends that I have that is so no-nonsense that if it had come from any other source, I wouldn't have even bothered to investigate it. But when I went there, I met one of the greatest minds probably of the 20th century, Dr. William Walsh, and quite incidentally, one of his colleagues, who was a world-class psychiatrist, the other, one of the greatest brilliant minds of the 20th century. And when I spoke to these two, I was very perplexed because what they were telling me, I just had a very hard time believing. And I had a difficult choice. I could either go for the immediate money and gratification out west, or I might be chancing upon something that is so unique and cutting edge that would make my life absolutely worthwhile in a very different way.
Mm-hmm.
And needless to say, seeing is believing. While I was at that original center, I did indeed see schizophrenics go back to work and holding down part-time jobs and schooling. I saw children with autism lose their diagnoses. I saw people with anxiety and depression do tremendously better, and many were absolutely lost their diagnoses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And not just one or two times. This was a normal incidence mm-hmm. out of thousands and thousands of patients per year.
Mm-hmm.
That, to say the least, Carl, I'm still here.
Right.
And it's been a good 9-10 years so far
mm-hmm.
of doing primarily this type of work. So
great.
That's how I happened in this, mm-hmm. into this field.
What do you think causes mental learning and behavioral disorders?
A very interesting question, and they're really three separate questions. With regard to mental and behavior disorders, we see that quite a few of these disorders are really related to biochemical imbalances and difficulties in a process we call methylation. It's a molecular process, and it occurs at a DNA level as well as a neurotransmitter level. But it's basically one where certain nutrients and certain elements that we can put together at therapeutic levels, and those therapeutic levels are several times RDA. You can't eat this sort of thing and you can't buy this over the counter, but certainly targeted levels of nutrients can actually affect DNA expression, genetic expression, and absolutely rebalance the chemistries that lead to a lot of these problematic
mm-hmm.
areas.
Mm-hmm.
So especially with mental health and behavior, and quite interestingly, behavior disorders are some of the easiest, or shall we say, the most rapidly responding disorders that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Learning disorders are a much more complicated issue, and they tend to be very individualistic and very differential towards both biochemistry and sometimes actually genetic disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Now, genetic disorders are different from epigenetic disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Epigenetic disorders are disorders that, yes, indeed, they're hardwired into the DNA, but how they show up depends upon the environment in which the child is developing in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
Genetic disorders, it's hardwired into the DNA. However, it doesn't matter what the biochemical environment is in the womb, it's still going to come out the same disorder time after time after time.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas an epigenetic disorder might be something like autism.
Mm-hmm.
A parent of an autistic child may have some anxiety. A sibling of that autistic child may have Asperger's disorder, or they may have alcoholism, or even develop Alzheimer's disease later on.
Mm-hmm.
That is based upon the environment of the womb and the outside environment after birth that affects genetic expression.
Mm-hmm.
So we call that epigenetics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, in a family where there's a genetic disorder, let's just say it's, for example, Tay-Sachs disorder. Now, with Tay-Sachs disorder, you'll typically see Tay-Sachs with everyone in the family who gets affected.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what the environment is.
Mm-hmm.
So learning disorders can be both genetic and they can be epigenetic in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes the generalization of those things very difficult. The epigenetic disorders we often see with regard to things like methylation issues, or in terms of learning actual developmental processes that can be helped along the way
mm-hmm.
through a variety of different treatments. So there's a very good prognosis for learning disorders that are related to epigenetics.
Mm-hmm.
The prognosis for learning disorders that are related to genetics is a little bit more difficult and challenging. And certainly that requires sort of a case-by-case delineation and examination.
Mm-hmm. There used to be testing, genetic testing for methylation, but I mm-hmm. see from the website that the FDA has closed the site down that was doing that testing. So I guess there's no way now that one can determine through testing whether or not they have methylation?
No, quite differently.
Really?
The testing that they were doing was genetic testing based upon the idea that certain enzymes that had mutations in them could terrifically affect expression of DNA and therefore affect methylation, and then therefore that would be a really big to-do. And what we evaluated, and not just we at the Walsh Research Institute and at Mensa Medical, but also independent studies done by Harvard as well as the Mayo Clinic, assessed that those very tests that you're talking about, those genetic tests, were not true reflective elements for methylation. They were skewed because these tests were not quantitative in nature, first of all. They didn't tell you actually how much methyl was present in the system. They simply gave you a hint that one enzyme, or two, or three, or four, might have mutations that could affect the methylation process. They didn't tell you how much it would affect it, or if even it could shift the balance. And Carl, let me just share with you, with regard to methylation, there's not only under-methylation, which is what these genetic tests were basically trying to describe. There's also over-methylation, of which none of those genetic tests at all were involved in assessing. And that was a very big problem, because any time one small mutation was thought to have arisen, it was throwing people into a tizzy. And they were saying, oh, no, I must be under-methylated because this one test shows that this enzyme may be deficient. Well, you know, Carl, in the methylation process, there are more than 15 different enzymes involved in the sum total of what is methylation. There are enzymes that involve under-methylation and enzymes that involve over-methylation. And the sum total is really what you want to know. That's what determines whether or not you're an under-methylator or an over-methylator. How much total methyl is made. And there were no genetic tests designed to assess that.
And are people working on that?
Well, actually, we have a test. We've had a test for over 30 years. Yes, sir. And it's not even a genetic test. It's a biochemical test. The biochemical test actually is an assay involving histamine. Blood histamine can actually tell us whether or not you are an under-methylator, an over-methylator, or normally methylated person. And the reason, Carl, is that we know that there's a very specific relationship between methyl and histamine. It's kind of like the Hatfields and the McCoys in the old days. They're diametrically opposed. If you have high histamine, you have low methyl. And that's because histamine suppresses methyl in concentration in the system. And quite the opposite, if you have high methyl, you'll show up as low histamine because methyl suppresses histamine. So there's a very strong and consistent relationship in that biochemical test that's actually far more accurate because it gives us a quantifiable assessment of methyl, not some guess at a qualitative assessment. And what we need to know is just how under-methylated or just how over-methylated you are. And that's what this histamine test reveals. So the loss of this genetic test is not a difficulty. And in many ways, it's probably a blessing because that test was giving many false negatives or false positives to individuals who really were not quite as the test indicated.
Is there something that can be done for that condition without drugs, without medication?
Absolutely. For both under and over methylation, there are compositions of elements and metals and nutrients that directly can improve methylation and shift it more towards a more normalized level. And when we see that happening, you know, in the old days, Carl, we thought we were only affecting neurotransmitters. But thanks to the work of the brilliant Dr. William Walsh, we're now seeing that we're actually affecting DNA expression. We're affecting genes and genetics. That's why we strongly urge people not to play
away with high concentrations of nutrients on their own, because we're well aware as physicians and scientists of all of the different places where fixing or affecting methylation can be a problem or can be a success. It's not guesswork. It's highly, highly meticulous, directed, targeted therapy. But it's done so at the individual level. Okay, every person is a different entity and has to be assessed individually. We can't make blanket generalizations outside of the fact that, say, you may need a certain nutrient combination, but you need to know the appropriate dosage. And it's going to be different for each person based upon symptoms, the disorder, and the level of severity of the disorder. Okay? So each person is going to be treated very differently.
Something like the phenylketonuria then in the past that would lead to mental disorders, and then the patient had to go on a special type of protein diet to avoid that?
Correct.
Is that right?
That's half the issue. The other half is now there's a proactive approach where we literally go in and correct the methylation problem. So we're constantly battling methyl, not passively by avoidance, but actively by targeting the methylation condition and challenging it at every level. And so we can balance the epigenetic construct with powerful nutrient therapy.
That's great. Are there other interventions that you use for these disorders besides nutrition?
Well, we use actually, Carl, we refer to it as nutrient therapy. And that's because you cannot eat your way into appropriate treatment with these things. But your use of that term nutrition is interesting because it's the opposite side, the flip side of what we do as well, which means that once we've determined, for example, let's say your methylation status, we can now tell you the type of diet that can be more appropriate in general for you and beneficial for not only your physical state, but your cognitive state as well. Now, if you're the average person who has no, you know, cognitive disorders, no anxiety, no depression, no, you know, whatever it may be, then, you know, pretty much you can eat whatever you want to eat. And it's not going to affect you one way or the other, except for maybe getting obese or, you know, being extremely thin. But if you're someone with cognitive challenges, someone with anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, autism, ADHD, then what you eat can drastically affect your behavior and your cognition. Some foods can be very inflammatory and kind of cloud the brain and cloud the judgment, so it's hard for the brain to process. But having tested the methylation status and even some other metals that could be either high or low, toxic or non-toxic, we can actually talk to individuals about generalized dietary approaches that would be more to their benefit than inflammatory or detrimental.
Then can you describe how you determine a patient's biochemistry and the process that you use for treating at your clinic?
Absolutely. The first thing that we do is that we have actually a fairly lengthy process of interview. Our nursing staff will see a patient roughly for about 45 minutes, going through questions and discussions and evaluations. And then they'll have a cursory physical examination and traditional discussion from our doctors. And then that's when we get into the meat of things, Carl. Then we'll spend approximately another hour to an hour and a half with just an interview discussing the origins of their condition, family history, genetics, and the evaluation of any chemical data that they may bring with them. So in other words, they're basically paper history. After that process is over, we usually have a good idea as to what type of chemistries might be associated with this individual. But then we order very specific targeted testing for the patient to undergo, biochemical testing. When we get those test results, that's when we put together that vast history and the chemical analysis. And this is the combination that allows us to produce a very individualized, targeted nutrient therapy program for just that person. We've seen siblings, we've seen family members together, and their chemistries can be overlapping but still very different.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not a generalizable approach in that sense. We don't create one nutrient approach and say, here, everyone in your family should take it.
Mm-hmm.
We have to actually interview and treat each family member as an individual and separately.
Mm-hmm.
Now then, after that, we typically reevaluate both the patient and the chemistry at six-month intervals for the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep a running log of each one of the chemical imbalances. And we will literally follow the trends. So here, Carl, this is what's great about mm-hmm. this whole approach nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
We can look and have objective evidence as to how someone is doing, and we can have objective evidence that we're moving in the right direction, or for some reason things aren't going as well as they should, irrespective of how the patient feels.
Mm-hmm.
Both the chemistry, the test results, and the patient's symptomatology all have to agree.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in traditional psychiatry, what we pretty much had was a guessing game
mm-hmm.
of what the patient was telling us they were feeling and what drug or medication we used to treat the symptoms.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We don't have that anymore. What mm-hmm. we have is a different paradigm, the paradigm that traditional medicine uses for everything else, which is symptoms, laboratory testing,
mm-hmm.
and based upon those two, treatment protocols.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge, huge leap in development in the field of psychiatry, in the field of cognitive health. I don't like using the term mental health. It sounds like there's something wrong with people that can't be erased, and that is not true. What we've come to see is that many of these typical psychiatric disorders, or diagnoses rather,
mm-hmm.
are really not quite that.
Mm-hmm.
They're due to some other biochemical or molecular cause that in many respects can be corrected.
Mm-hmm. How successful are your interventions then?
Across the board, in general, we have about an 85% success rate.
Wow.
Absolutely. And like I said, Carl, mm-hmm. at the beginning, this is why I'm still here. Because if someone had told me this when mm-hmm. I was, you know, I'm a family practice doctor by tradition,
mm-hmm.
Treating psychiatric disorders is one of the things that I did. If someone had told me they had that kind of success rate, I would have said, sure, okay, whatever, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
I'll believe it when I see it. And yet, day in and day out, this is what we see.
Mm-hmm.
Our reason for having a 15% failure rate is, first and foremost, noncompliance.
Mm-hmm. Right.
For some mm-hmm. reason, when patients don't comply, or, and I'll be quite honest, quite a few mothers or fathers out there like to dabble and try to fix their kids themselves, and they interfere
mm-hmm.
with the protocols that we've developed. That's the biggest reason for system failure in what it is we do.
Mm-hmm. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. I invite you to my two websites, www.holistichealthshow.com. where you will find all of the previous shows for the last 5.5 years archived under the blog. Using the search engine, you can find specific people or you can find specific topics of interest to you. You can also find my book, Healthy Holistic Aging, and also my latest book, You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions, for sale. You can sign up for my free monthly newsletter, and you can also sign up to have the shows mailed to you. I invite you to my second website, www.beatlungcancer.net, where you will find my latest book, You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions, which discusses my experience with lung cancer 39 years ago, when I was given 6 months to live by traditional medicine and decided to use all natural interventions using a holistic approach. This approach was successful and I had no recurrence. Additional chapters in the book by Dr. Bernie Siegel, Dr. James Forsyth, Dr. Francisco Contreras, Dr. Kim Dossel, and Tanya Harder Pierce give additional ways to treat lung cancer using alternative, non-invasive, non-toxic interventions. You will also find the endorsements for the book and other information about it. And under the blog, you will find many of the radio and television shows that I have been interviewed on over the last year about this book. I also invite you to like my pages on Facebook. I have a page under Carl Helvey. I have a page under Holistic Health Show and a page under Beat Lung Cancer. I invite you to join me on LinkedIn under Carl Helvey. And I also invite you to join me on Twitter under Holist Health Show. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to seeing you next time. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a great day.